Guess you don't know where we're going this morning, do you? I do preach through books, and we've been working on the book of Matthew now for quite a while. We are getting to the end of the Olivet Discourse, so we've talked a lot about eschatology and things like that over the last few weeks. We're into chapter 25 now. We studied the parable of the 10 virgins last week. This week we're going to be looking at the parable of the talents, and what we're going to find is this, is they all have two aspects to them, these different parables, and it's always a positive aspect if you believe in the Lord, but it's a and you're obedient to the Lord, and it's a negative thing if you're not. Do you think you're boneheaded? Now, all you husbands, I know that your wife thinks you're boneheaded. But I'm just asking all of us, do we think we're boneheaded? And the truth of the matter is, if we want to be honest about it, at least to some degree we all are, which means that some things just don't settle very deeply in us very easily. They have to be hammered in there, okay? And it seems like the older you get, the more hammering it takes to get the stuff to stick, right? What you're going to find is there's a lot of similarity between these two parables. So Jesus, in essence, in a sense, is repeating himself. And like we talked about last week, any time that Jesus repeats himself, we need to take special note of it. I mentioned this just a little while ago, and that is this doctrine that's called accommodation. And basically it means that God accommodates our place as being creatures created by him. In other words, when he talks to us, he talks in baby talks. When he explains things to us, he tries to explain that he explains those things in a way that we can actually understand and comprehend them. But again, it just speaks to the greatness of our Almighty God. He truly is incomprehensible for every one of us. But at the same time, he has made himself known. He's revealed himself in specific and special ways to us as well. So we know something about him. We don't know all there is to know about him, nor will we ever know all there is to know about him. What I believe is this, is we will spend all of eternity coming to know God, and the more we know, the more we'll realize there's more to know. And it will never, ever end. That's how great and how grand he is. Just keep those things in mind as we read these verses. For it's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went and traded with them. And I skipped a line. Went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received 5 talents went out and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents, gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came and brought 5 more talents, saying, "Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, "Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." And the one also who had received 1 talent came and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours." But his master answered and said to him, "You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest." Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have in an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Most of you don't remember a young lady, not so young anymore, by the name of Susie Palka. She used to come to the church years ago. She had to move to Bellevue eventually, so she stopped coming. I've mentioned Susie lately, I think. But there's certain times when we do membership interviews that just kind of stand out, and Susie's has always stood out for me because she gave an answer to the questions that we typically don't hear. Because we ask her, what would you say to God if you died today and you stood before him and he asked you, why should he let you into heaven? And she gave us the right answer. But one of us, I think, said, well, can you elaborate on that? She said, you know what she said? She said, I want to go to heaven because I don't want to go to that other place, to that bad place. We don't think about this, that sometimes people are actually scared. Hell scares people into heaven. You ever hear anybody say something like that? I think, unfortunately, today, very often, we don't talk about judgment. We don't talk about hell. We don't talk about things like that too much because they make people feel uncomfortable. So what we want to do is just focus on the good stuff, the good aspects of the gospel. And just remember, the gospel means literally good news. But it's not good news to everybody, guys. If you don't believe it, it's bad news. In fact, it's very bad news. We all know what it's like to go away on a journey. Can't imagine anybody here has never gone anywhere. Some of us go quite a bit, actually. I would imagine some of you sometimes feel like you don't have a home anymore. You're going so much. And we realize that when we do go, we have to get ready. Close up the house, get ourselves ready, wash clothes, pack clothes, and as you get older, more importantly, get all your prescriptions filled. Make sure that the car is serviced if we're driving. Arrange for mail collection, get all the bills paid up. And then usually if we're gone for more than a week or so, we'll either ask or pay someone to keep a special watch on our house. In this particular instance, evidently we're talking about a very wealthy man who was making plans to go on a trip. And before he goes, he has to make arrangements for things. So he brings his servants. And he gives to one 5 talents, to another one 2, and to another one 1. Now, the term talent appears in Scripture for a number of reasons. Sometimes it's used as a unit of weight measurement. Sometimes it has to do with a particular amount of money. What we're going to assume this morning is that it's being referred to as what's called an attic talent, which was in use during the day that Jesus was walking among the people. And just to give you an idea of how much that would be around 6,000 denarii in the currency of the day, which would amount to the amount of money that or the wage that an average worker would earn if he worked for 20 years. So we're talking about a lot of money. This wasn't this bag of quarters and, you know, watch over them for me and all that. We're talking about a lot of money that was entrusted to each one of these slaves. And just remember this, as we've been studying these parables, there's been something emphasized over the last few passages on the tail end of this Olivet Discourse, and the message over and over again is, be ready because I could come at any time. The important thing is for you to be ready, for you to be doing what I've called you to do when I suddenly appear, because I'm coming at a time when you least expect me to come. Just remember this, guys. Psalm 24, verse 1, the earth is the Lord's and all it contains. See, very often we talk about our car, our truck, our house, our money in the bank, our investments. We have all of those things because God has entrusted us with His stuff. And the question that's on the table at this point is this, is that it's what are we doing with what He's entrusted us with? Are we using it in ways that He gains, or are we using it for our own self-pleasures and that sort of thing? We know this. We know the Lord doesn't expect us to give absolutely everything away, right? Because we know that He provides for us, and so some of what He gives to us is for our provision. But the truth is it's all His. His stuff. And He has reasons for giving it to us. People don't like to talk about money. They don't like to talk about finances in the church. They don't like to talk about giving in the church. But this is it, guys. I heard a story one time about a little boy that received like 10 silver dollars from an uncle or something on his birthday. And he sat down and started deciding what he was going to do with them. And he took the first one and put it aside. He said, that belongs to Jesus. And he said, well, I'm going to do this with this one, this one. And then he gets up to number 10. He said, and I'm going to give this one to Jesus. And his mother said, well, why are you going to do that? You already said that you're going to give the first one to Jesus. He said, I gave that to Him because He tells me to. I'm giving that the other one to Him as a gift. Sometimes we think about these things really in the wrong perspective. It's amazing how little things like children say sometimes can really give us a better picture of the mindset that we need to have in regard to things like this. What's Jesus going to find us doing with His stuff when He comes? We know this. We know that this is a picture of Christ, right? We understand that this man that's going on a long trip is Jesus, because Jesus is getting ready to ascend back into heaven. And He's going to be gone for a while. But then we know He's coming back, right? So the question really is what will He find us doing with His stuff when He comes? Are we ready? After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Keep this in context, guys. We're talking about a lot of what we've been talking about the last 2 months has been the second coming of Christ, right? We're talking about when the whole thing is here is when Christ returns, and He is going to return, right? He's going to come and He's going to consummate His eternal kingdom among men. And one of the things the scriptures are very clear about is that when He does come, He's going to settle accounts with everybody, unbelievers and believers alike. Two of these slaves took their master's money and they invested it. And so he had gained when he returned. One of them just kept it. And you and I want to just commend that slave because he had more money in his hand than he would see in 20 years and he could have easily stolen it. He could have taken the money and gone on a little trip of his own. But he didn't do that. He dug a hole and put it in the ground. You and I would commend him for doing something like that, right? I mean, he doesn't seem to be an especially bad person. not willing to steal from his master, but he completely understood the reason the master had given him that one talent to start with. That was for gain. I hope we all understand this, that as Christ calls us and we come to faith in him, that we are his servants. And he's called us to do lots of things. But put in a nutshell, it all has to do with increasing the advancement of his kingdom. The way I see it, you could probably categorize people into three different groups. Number one is those who have slandered all that God has entrusted them with. Even the unbeliever, what they have, the Lord has entrusted his stuff to that person. And very often they squander it away on very worldly things for self-gratification and self-promotion and use it to experience every immoral thing that this world has to offer. They see wealth as only being a means to fulfill their selfish pleasures. You think there are people like that in the world? Unfortunately. There are those who simply take what God has given to them and they hold it, but they don't really use it for any gain. You probably know people like this. And that is people that have the idea that I've made a profession of faith in Jesus, my sins are forgiven, and the only thing God expects me to do now is just sit and wait for Jesus. They don't see their life as being a mission at all for Jesus. They're saved. That's all that matters. That's all that counts. The only thing God wants for me to do is be able to say I have faith in Jesus Christ when he appears. You understand, it's that person that Jesus is speaking against in this parable. The one who sees the salvation as just being something that's of value to them and really has nothing to do with anybody else. I mean, simple math, guys. Would you say the church is growing or shrinking in the United States? Well, depends on who you talk to, but a lot of people would say it's shrinking. Maybe not shrinking as, you know, this big organization that most people look upon as being the church. I just want you to know that some of that's not really church. And there are people that will gather today in churches that have the name of Christ, you know, in different places and things like that. But Christ won't be preached. What's going to be preached is, how do I get to heaven? Well, I just be like Jesus. I just work hard. I hope all of you understand that. That is one of the things that makes Christianity very different from every other religion. And that is this, is we know we get to heaven not because of what we've done. We get to heaven simply because of what he's done, and we've trusted him to do that. We also know this, that faith without works is dead. So people that sit home on the couch just waiting for Jesus and doing nothing for Jesus, what I'm telling you, there's good reason to believe the faith they claim to have is dead. And it will not save anyone. Just think about this. Well, I did this. I've used this I don't know how many times over the years. But early on in the life of Springs, I sat one day and I started figuring. We have got 20 people in the church right now. If every one of us would set off on a mission of discipling other people, and we would do this, we would just basically focus on one person and we would work at discipling them for a year or two, to the point that they were ready themselves to actually go out and disciple other people. I figured that by the time Springs was 20 years old, we would have reached 2 million people. Now, who would ever think that a little church like Springs could have the capability of accomplishing something like that? And there's got to be only one answer to a shrinking church, and that is people in the church, on the average, are not even bringing what or being involved in the conversion of one person to Christianity. Sadly, there are people who believe they're going to heaven, and they have never one time in their whole time life even spoken the gospel to another living being. Guys, no. It's good news, and if it really is good news, and we know it's good news, then why in the world will we not just run down the road screaming it at the top of our lungs? I don't know about you, but there's some things I really long for. One of those is peace in the church. Kids ask me every year what I want for Christmas, and that's all what I tell them. Peace. I lost my train of thought. Seriously. The issue is, what are we doing with his stuff right now? He gives you and I opportunities all the time, probably daily, maybe even hourly. When was the last time you invited somebody to church? And then we come here on Sunday morning sometimes and go, where is everybody? Or why aren't there more people here? Because we see it as everybody else's responsibility. Because we love it when new people come. I mean, we really do. And one of the things that I hear all the time is when people come here, how loving the church congregation is to them and all of that. We're very good, I think, in some things. And one of those is making people feel like they're welcome and wanted. But we've got to be willing and actually eager and zealous for looking for opportunities. How many of you, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but how many of you have not taken any of those cards out of the Narthex that we put out there a couple of months ago, just a little, you know, like a business card that we can take with us wherever we go, and when we have an opportunity, invite somebody to church and give them one of those little cards. How many people's even taken one of those cards? So do you get the point, guys? Are we really about our Father's business, or are we more about our own business? Because one of the biggest parts of our business is to share the gospel with the unbelieving world around us. And it's true for every one of us. There are other things that have to be considered too as well. Sacrifice. Sacrifice is not a difficult word to understand. It's not one we very often like to talk about necessarily, because unless we're talking about other people sacrificing things, that's a little bit more comfortable for us than we're talking about ourselves having to sacrifice. You nor I would be sitting here today if not for the great sacrifice of Christ and not for the continued sacrifices of the saints down through the generations. We look around at our world right now and we're amazed at what we're seeing happening. But it should not surprise any of us. It does. And we can't understand it. But the church has lost ground in our nation in these last years, and we know it. There's no doubt about it. The only thing sustaining the United States of America today is its balance on the fingertip of God Himself. The church is weak, guys. Our nation's weak because the church is weak. Why is the church weak? Because we are weak. It's very easy for us to blame everybody else for everything. Let me tell you something. If we haven't been about doing evangelism, stuff like that, we don't have one inkling of ground to gripe about things going on. Because we've done nothing positive to make a difference. Jesus is going to come and return one day. And this is what I forgot. I don't know how I did. But I don't know about you, but I long for some things. I long for peace in the church. You know what I long for more is for Jesus to look at me and say, "Well done, oh good and faithful servant." Do we ever think about that? Is it like, you know, something, a sign on the frontals of our foreheads? Don't you long to hear those words? Jack Denmark sent me something this week that I thought was a little entertaining, but at the same time brought some serious issues to the table. These were statements made by the Canadian equivalent of David Letterman or one of those kind of people, talking about the stupidity of Americans. He said, only in America could politicians talk about the greed of the rich at a $35,000 per plate campaign fundraiser. Only in America can they have terrorists kill people in the name of Allah and have the media primarily react by fretting that Muslims might be harmed by the backlash. Only in America would they make people who want to legally become Americans wait for years in their home country and pay tens of thousands of dollars for the privilege while they discuss letting anyone who sneaks into the country illegally just magically to become a citizen. Only in America do you need a driver's license to cash a check or to buy alcohol or board a commercial aircraft, but do not to vote. Only in America do they collect more tax dollars from the people than any nation recorded in history, spend $1 trillion more than it has per year, for a total spending of $7 million per minute, and complain it doesn't have enough money. Only America could rich people who pay 86% of the income taxes be accused of not paying their fair share by people who don't pay any income taxes at all. Sounds pretty crazy, doesn't it? The sad thing is reality. I thought about this and wondered how I could put it in the context of the church. I came up with some ideas. Only in the church today can people claim to obey everything the Bible says when they spend very little time even reading it, and they don't know what it says. Only in the church today can people claim to follow Jesus when their life doesn't look much more different than that of the average unbeliever. Only in the church today can people claim to have Jesus as their first priority when their checkbook says otherwise. Only in the church today can people know God's mercy but don't show mercy themselves? Can claim God's forgiveness through Jesus Christ but remain unforgiving themselves? Can love Jesus but not love fellow believers? Can appreciate God's grace but not practice it? Church is shallow today, guys, because of people like me. When Christ comes, what is he going to find us doing? Working for his gain. Taking what he's given us and just being satisfied with it and sitting and waiting. Or taking what he gives us and burying it in a hole where it accomplishes nothing. The faithful servants will be rewarded, but the unfaithful will lose, not just a little, they will lose absolutely everything. Thrown out into the outer darkness, in that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I don't know if you've heard people say this or not recently, but over the last few decades, they've been talking about the church in Africa, and they describe the church in Africa as being a mile wide and a half an inch deep. In other words, a lot of people there claim Christ, but when you look at their lives, there's not much evidence of it. So their faith is very shallow. That's not what I found in Africa at all. When I was there, the faith of the Africans amazed me. One of the things that amazed me was how people who had so very little were so willing to give, joyfully giving from what little they have to other people. It amazed me. Came to head one time, Walter and I, we were having a dinner. It was a kind of a going away dinner. We were leaving, and there was a missionary couple that had been there for a few years. They were leaving, and so the people gave us a party, a going away party. And they prepared the meal. And the meal was ground nuts. Mutaka, which is a banana they take and they grind, and they smash it up like potatoes. Ground nuts, by the way, are peanuts. And then there was one little teeny tiny plate about the size of a saucer that had a few pieces of meat on it. And you couldn't serve yourself. It wasn't a buffet. They served the plates. And they passed the plates to specific people. And you can imagine who the meat went to. The people who really didn't want it for a lot of reasons. They didn't need it. There were people in the room that needed that protein far more than they did. And the other reason was you weren't too sure what kind of meat it was to start with. But over and over again, I saw this same kind of thing happening with these people, these new converts, and they had a zeal for God that just went beyond the little means that they had. Sometimes I think we live it at a disadvantage by living where we do because we are, let's face it, spoiled brats. It's true for every single one of us. We gripe about life, how hard it is and all that. In some ways it is, don't get me wrong. But even in the midst of our griping, we're blessed. Think about surgeries and things about that. Think about Ross. Think about the pain she endured for all of those years. Is she the only one in the world that has that kind of degree of pain? No, there's lots of them. But God blessed her with this surgery, and she's doing a whole lot better. But think about all the people that it begins, and they endure it the rest of their life. There's way more in that category. Hell here is described, in some places it's described as eternal fire. Here it's described as being thrown into the outer darkness. Now, what do you think that means? Well, very often in the Bible, God is described as light, right? In a sense, it's going into the darkness, apart from the light of God. Sometimes I've told you this. I think if we got a picture of heaven, if we got a picture of the eternal kingdom awaiting us, we would gladly, willingly run to enduring anything that we had to make sure we made it to that place. But we don't talk about hell much. I think probably if we got a glimpse of hell, we would do everything we possibly could to keep even our worst enemy from going there. And it's eternal. It's not just for a little while. It goes on and on and on and on. And the sad thing about it is the one thing that could stop, make it stop, and that is repentance. But you need to understand something. These people never will acknowledge God's rightful place. They never will repent of the sins that they've committed against Him. Never, ever. I don't want you to leave here discouraged. I really don't. You and I need to hear the kind of things we talked about this morning. We really do, for a lot of reasons. But one of those is this. It helps us to refocus ourselves on what really is important. Because I want to remind you this morning, guys, that you're saved by grace and grace only. You're saved by God's doing, not by your own doing. The only thing Jesus is teaching us here is if that is true for you, if it is really true for you, you will have a desire to take what He gives you and be able to give more back to Him. I have no doubt. No doubt in my mind that He will be faithful in all that He's promised. It would be nice if we were faithful to Him like He is to us. We're not. I'm not. You're not. You understand why we need Jesus all the time? We need Jesus, as much of Jesus as we can have of Jesus, with every single passing moment, with every breath that we take. We need Jesus just as much as we've ever needed Jesus. So does everybody else. There are people around you that live in your neighborhood, maybe family members, maybe people you work with, people that you have some kind of casual acquaintance with. I'm telling you, some of those have never, ever in their whole lifetime heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. Not once. The number of those people is growing in our world around us. I see this at the college. Let me tell you, there's some kids in those classes every single semester that shine like bright lights. And when you start digging, you find out that every single one of them is a believer. They're outgoing, some more than others. They seem to have this idea that I'm here not just to work to my good, but to help to work to the good of the people around me. When they see people that are struggling in the class, They invite them to study with them. Sometimes I think we're very down on our young people in this nation today, and maybe there's some reason for that, but the reason they are, one of the big reasons they are, is because we are the way we are. But let me tell you, there's some bright, shining lights out there, and they stand out like a sore thumb. And as time goes by, it's going to be more that way, it seems. Do you know what, guys? There's a sense in which Jesus expects every one of us to stand out like a sore thumb. Not in a bad way. In a good way. Passages like this are in the Bible for a lot of reasons. One of those is to challenge us. Another one is to convict us. Another one may be to scare the bejeebies a little bit out of us. But there's another big reason. And that's when we look at it. We compare ourselves to this. Who would you compare yourself to? The guy that had the 5 talents, or God that had the 2 talents? Or the guy just who had this stuff and didn't do anything with it? And let me warn you, in your assessment of yourself, you may be very wrong. You may be very wrong. Things like this drive us day after day, time after time, to the foot of the cross. And if we ever leave here on Sunday morning and we don't have some sense that we have gone there, then we wasted our time. Because this is all about the gospel. And the gospel is all about grace. We're going to be celebrating the Lord's Supper this morning. Before we do that, the praise team is going to come and we're going to be led in a hymn of preparation. And that's what it's for. It's for preparing us. We should tell us if we're preparing for this, it must mean it's something special. Well, it really is special. It's very special. It's a great, precious gift that God has given to us that we share with each other. I don't come to your house and give you communion. If I do, I won't come by myself. I'll bring part of the community of Christ with me. We're communing with Him. We're communing with each other. We're remembering the cross. This is all about the cross. And not just the cross, but everything that Jesus has done for us. That we receive by faith. And just remember this. That if your faith is not in Jesus, this table's not for you. It's for those people who know that they have sinned, and not just a little bit, they know they've sinned big time, and they unfortunately, they can still see sin in their life. They're not oblivious to it. They know every day that if they're saved, it's only because God has saved them. It's not because of what they've done or what they're doing. So remember Him. Because He lived His life for you. He died that horrible death for you. He rose from the dead for you. He ascended into heaven for you. Right now, He's sitting at the right hand of God the Father, and He continues to intercede for you in the heavenly places. He is now our heavenly advocate. He speaks your name in the throne room of God. As one of His.